The E-Commerce Fuel Podcast is brought to you by One-Click Upsell from Zipify Apps. And I love One-Click Upsell because it offers an incredible amount of bang for the buck. If you get the app, it's simple enough and powerful enough that you can get it set up and get running in an hour or two, get those upsells in front of your customers. And in return, one in six of your customers are going to spend more with you because one in six people who are offered an upsell through One-Click Upsell actually take it. And that's money that just flows instantly without having to spend more on advertising, without having to go through painful, expensive, timely CRO processes. This is something you can set up and start seeing the fruits of right away. They've helped generate over $150 million in additional revenue for Shopify merchants just like you. So if that sounds interesting, you can learn more about One-Click Upsell and get started with them at ecommercefuel.com/upsell. Hey guys, it's Andrew here, and welcome to the E-Commerce Fuel Podcast, the show dedicated to helping seven-figure plus e-commerce brands build incredible businesses and amazing lives. And today on the show, I'm joined by Sujay Kapadia, who is the owner of Hospitology Products and an E-Commerce Fuel private community member. And to be honest with you, I just reached out to Sujay because he'd been in a few ECF Lives, seemed like a really great, interesting, fun, upbeat dude. And I had never had a chance to connect with him. I thought he had an interesting product line. I thought, hey, I don't know what we're going to talk about, but you seem like an interesting entrepreneur. Let's connect. And it didn't disappoint. I mean, the guy didn't know this coming into it, but ended up starting his life as a doctor, you know, ended up leaving that field for the e-commerce world, has been selling on Amazon, I think since 2012. And so we dive into Amazon a lot. We talk about how he's seen Amazon change. We talk about his listings. He gives some recommendations for some of the agencies he's used that have been really helpful. One thing that's most interesting, I think, is some of the photography on his website or on his listings for Amazon, rather, they're digitally made. They're 3D models that look they're scary because they look just as good as the real thing. Yet a lot of his photography, instead of having to schlep a bunch of, you know, camera gear and people out somewhere, he can do it digitally and it looks just as good, if probably not, probably better because you can control everything than the real thing. And so we talk about that, how he's been able to do that to scale up his professional product images. The product line he sells at Hospitology Products is bedding goods. So, you know, bed protectors, linens, things like that. That's the product line that he specializes in sells. So hope you enjoy it and let's go ahead and jump in. So Sujay, I think you may be the only member of our community that has performed an autopsy. And I was hoping you could kind of talk about the circumstances surrounding that. What happened there?
Well, yeah, sure enough. And that's so funny that you'd pull that. Some people I've met in ECF might know this, but in my former career, I was a physician. And so part of one of the rotations that I had done in medical school was pathology. And pathology is sort of the study of disease. And one of the aspects of doing pathology or practicing pathology is, and not all of them do it, but people that do autopsies are pathologists. You know, I'm sitting there in the pathology lab and 90% of your time is just spent sitting in front of microscopes, looking at tissue samples and that sort of thing. Then my senior came up and said, hey, let's go. We're going downstairs to do this autopsy. And I wasn't really even aware that that was part of the rotation or one of the things that I would be learning or doing. But, you know, like all things in medical school, you just go with it. Definitely an interesting experience. I wouldn't say my favorite experience of my college life, but, you know, hey, I can say I've done an autopsy.
That's crazy. So how did you, I mean, you were a physician, obviously you are, unless you are running your e-commerce business on the side and still practicing medicine, guessing that's not the case. How, you know, it seems rare that physicians pivot, given that just like you have so much training, such an investment of your life to become a physician. How in the world did you go from being a physician to running a meaningful e-commerce business? What's the arc of the story there?
Yeah, sure. I think the main crux of it is that I was actually not super committed to becoming a physician in the first place. I'm not going to say my dad forced me to do it, but you know, there was a good amount of pressure to do it. And it was pressure in the way of, you know, we just think this is the right thing. It is, it's something that is a safe bet. If you have a different idea about it later, you can do it. But, you know, rather than going to a college and just having no plan, do it this way. The other complication was that I actually applied to this medical program from high school. So it was something I applied for when I was 16 years old. And, you know, I tell people afterwards, I think this is a terrible program and a terrible idea, because I don't think anybody should really be choosing things like that in these modern times at the age of 16. I think that maturity level has just shifted so dramatically, you know, between the past 2-3 generations, that at 16, I just don't think you're ready to understand fully what you should do and what you want to do. But at that point, it was an 8-year commitment. And so I went off to my alma mater is the University of Illinois at Chicago. And so the deal is basically, you know, we go to their undergraduate school and they guaranteed us a place in the medical school afterwards. So that was sort of got the ball rolling. And then once I got into it, it was great. I loved it. It was fun work. And I really enjoyed being a doctor and what everything they do. But then as time goes on, just like all things, the education part is very different than the practice part. And once we started getting out there in the real world, I was doing my residency out in Manhattan in emergency medicine. I started to kind of see the reality of what it actually means to do the job of being a doctor. And it really just, it wasn't something that appealed to me as much. It just felt like I didn't have much control over my life anymore, that I'd basically just be a cog in that wheel. So it was a really tough decision, but I decided to just sever that tie. And then that was really, for me, that the time, the year after I quit medicine, I didn't really, and fortunately for me, I didn't have to work at that point. I had some money there to use. And so I was able to take some time and figure it out. That was really my freshman year of college, it felt like, because I took my GMAT, I was applying to B schools, I was doing, you know, looking at a whole bunch of different things, and then sort of was talking to my dad. And my dad has been in the hotel industry for a long time, as a supplier, as a designer, as a project manager. And he's had a company for I think he founded it in 1985. So it was a long, long time at that point. And he had good success and he had great relationships. And so he had started getting into direct importing at that time. So this is back in like 2001, 2002, when my dad had first gone to China. And the way he describes it, you know, compared to, I've been there now, of course, and it's a very different situation when he described it. And back then, he's like, nobody spoke English. You know, we would take some unmarked white van from the airport, drive for 5 hours out to some factory in the middle of nowhere, and then have like a really broken negotiation conversation with the factory there. And it was, and he would describe this and he sort of how we got started. Then obviously they figured it out to a better degree. And so he's like, I think, you know, there's some good opportunity for importing. I know some of my customers are looking for specific things. You know, that could be something you want to start doing in the meantime. So on a lark, I said, yeah, let's try it out, you know. And we started importing some textiles and some bedding items and that sort of thing, specifically for the hotel market. And it ended up being great. And I met some of my dad's contacts with some of the corporate brands that we work with on the hotel side and figured out, you know, what are you guys looking for? Where can we help maybe fill in the gaps with vendors that are not doing a great job? And we ended up becoming an approved vendor for Choice Hotels International. We produce products for La Quinta Hotels and Best Westerns and other things. And so that's how I got really started in 2011. This was a pretty nascent time in e-commerce. So there wasn't a ton of resource out there to sort of, you know, walk you through it. There wasn't tutorials and everybody, you know, telling you how to build a million-dollar Amazon business in 30 days. And so we just kind of was browsing around and really I started looking at competitors. Where are they selling? And then I realized I'm an Amazon customer, a very loyal one, and I'm starting to see similar products that I sell on Amazon. Why shouldn't I sell on Amazon? And that was so really it.
I'd love to jump in because you started selling it around 2009, 2010-ish on Amazon. Is that fair?
No, 2012, I should say.
2012. Okay, 2012. But still, probably earlier than almost everyone listening to the podcast, I would guess. So you've got a pretty unique perspective, and you kind of alluded to it, hinted at it earlier. But what early days, much easier to get traction, et cetera. Where do you feel, I mean, you've got a very meaningful, you're almost all on Amazon, I believe, and you've got a very meaningful, you know, meaningful presence and business there. You sell a lot of products. One of your products has like 9,000 ratings. It's insane. What are your thoughts on Amazon today especially in contrast to where you've come from?
Yeah. It's funny you mentioned that because I was talking to an Amazon ad exec earlier today and I ended up talking about this exact same thing that you're asking about. And I think today Amazon is still a meritocracy, but I think the merit is become misplaced. And it's no longer about serving up a wonderful product and a great customer experience. It's about who can play the games better, who can read the algo better, who can manipulate it better. And I think, you know, this is not some groundbreaking comment, or I'm pretty sure everybody understands this and knows this now, or feels the same way, who has been selling on Amazon for any period of time, is that it's, you get to the point where it's not about the product anymore. And that, I think, is the biggest problem with Amazon. I think you're starting to see that so clearly in the public opinion and trust in Amazon as well. I see it in my own personal shopping habits because, you know, I don't know about you, but I never before, it was a complete flicking of the switch to me. Before, it was whatever I could possibly buy, I want to see if I can buy it on Amazon first. I won't say proud to buy things on Amazon, but it made me feel smarter or better, you know, than buying it in a store or like, you know, in an old dodgy dinosaur way. I think that's very different now. And I now look to buy anything, as long as it's not like an extremely large markup or difference in price, I'll buy from any other website besides Amazon, which is, and not because I want to punish Amazon. I think it's become very important. And I see as a seller of products, it's important to keep a diversified stream of these retailers. And it's not good for one retailer to have that much power for anybody. I see it as from the selling side, but I also understand how that eventually translates into the customer experience. And as a buyer, and I think everyone knows now, you know, you do a search on Amazon, it's so hard to filter through the listings anymore. You could at least rely on the number of reviews and the quality of the reviews. And even that now has come into question a little bit. So I think that's tough. But at the end of the day, it still works most of the time. And I think in most categories and most products. And so that's why I'm still hopeful about it. I think they just have some work to do in terms of, you know, realigning the priorities about, you know, what products they sell, why, and who sees them.
Yeah. One thing with reviews is I feel like I trust so few reviews unless I hear it from my friend from kindergarten, right? Like, or at least someone that you trust in your personal life. Obviously, word of mouth, the strongest type of review and endorsement. But Yelp reviews, Amazon reviews, any kind of Amazon reviews, we've all been to the burrito place that has 150 five-star reviews and it's just crap. So when you think about like but at the same time, Amazon has, it seems like over, you know, I don't know, maybe 3 years ago at this point, there was a lot more games, incentivized reviews, lots of stuff, shady stuff happening with Amazon. They've cracked down on a lot of that. They've removed some of those. So how are you getting reviews these days? And how are people gaming the system these days? What are you seeing in the review space? Because they have cracked down, but we still trust them less. So what's going on?
Well, I think I'll do the second part first. I think what they've done is played whack-a-mole. And what they've done is, you know, and this, what you mentioned 3 years ago, right? That was actually, I was really upset then because we have never paid for a single review. We have never given away a product for a review. We've never done, you know, there's the rebate apps that exist, you know, you put your listing on there and that sort of thing, which is quote unquote sanctioned by Amazon. We haven't done a single thing. The only thing we've ever done to garner reviews is address our customers' issues the best we can. And we used to use an automated email follow-up program, which was Feedback 5, which was the first one I think that ever even existed. That's what we would do. And that's it. It was that and a combination. Like, you know, I mentioned this before. I think having a quality, good product that you take care of customers with and, you know, address issues with and make sure it's a great experience with, that's ultimately what's going to get you the reviews and keep the positive flywheel going. But what we're seeing now is when that review manipulation thing happened, we lost a ton of reviews. So what you're seeing now is a pared down version of what things should have been and what they would have been if they hadn't just cast a giant net in the hopes of, you know, catching most of the bad stuff. And so that's what they did. And I think it was, they used a lot of very broad metrics in order to deny reviews. They used a lot of broad metrics in order to prevent customers from leaving reviews. Like if they had too many, if they had too many suspicious ones, you know, certain customers would be barred from just even leaving a review. And we know where that goes wrong. And I think the problem with Amazon is what they tend to do always is they look at it as a scalable, you know, solution, and they just cast the giant net. And, you know, they know that they're going to get a whole bunch of good stuff and good people and white hats caught up in it. But in their opinion, it's easier and more efficient to just do that and then fix things on the back end. Well, the problem is now they're so big that they don't know how to fix things on the back end anymore. And so what's happened is that the people that were doing the black hat tactics, I think the first generation of them are gone. And what you have right now is a much more sophisticated black hat operation that exists in countries, you know, for example, behind a digital curtain like China, where, you know, it's much harder to deduce a lot of the shenanigans that Chinese sellers will do because they get to hide behind, you know, the veil of China's firewall. And, you know, I'm not an expert on this, so I won't go too far because I'll probably say something stupid. But I think that's what the problem is. And you can see it and people complain about it all the time, right? You have a new product. It's just, how do you get 30,000 reviews, you know, in a few months? It just like, it boggles the mind how that could even happen. And then when you look at the name of the brand, you know, it's just, it's some noun or used to be some noun with all the vowels removed. And that's the name of the brand. And so, you know, they have no website, they have no presence. It's obvious that they're, you know, they're not, the customer service is not primarily English speaking. You'll get illegal inserts in their product packages that you're not supposed to use according to Amazon terms of service. But, you know, it'll be completely incentivized reviews. So the idea of incentivized reviews going away, that's totally bogus, because in my Facebook group, actually, that I'm a part of, which is really great, a lot of great sellers in there, man, there's a post every week about a ridiculous product insert that they found in a product that they ordered from Amazon. And it flaunts all of the rules. It is a direct bribe. And yet it doesn't matter, because if you get shut down as a US seller, it's really hard to come back with new bank accounts and new everything. It's much easier for Amazon to say, wait a minute, we know you. You had a previous account. You know, you got canned. We're not going to give you a new account. But with the foreign sellers, it's much easier to mask their identities. You know, they don't care if they're into black hat tactics, because if they get shut down, well, they'll just start up a new account. And I think with Amazon, they've turned a blind eye for a long period of time to it. And maybe, you know, because at the end of the day, it didn't slow their growth. I think this year, next year, I think they've gotten enough bad press where they realize, okay, maybe we need to figure this out, because we can't let some of these foreign sellers just run rampant on the platform. So I do think review manipulation is still a very real thing. And that's why it's still a problem.
Hey, it's Andrew here with a quick aside. If you're listening to this episode and enjoying it, then I've got to tell you about our private community for 7- and 8-figure e-commerce brands. The secret sauce, as the name implies, is that everyone inside, we vet everyone to make sure they have real-world experience running an e-commerce brand and struggle with the same kind of things that you do if that's the position you're in. And why is that important? Well, it means you get fast, on-point answers to your most important questions. So if you've got somebody that HR issue and you're worried about letting someone go, but you're worried about a lawsuit, or you're trying to figure out the best ERP to implement, or maybe you're trying to understand marketing techniques, you can post a message to our form and get answers within hours, sometimes minutes, from experts who know this stuff. You get to plug into an amazing network of e-commerce entrepreneurs worldwide across the United States and the globe that you can connect with when you're traveling for meetups and get invites to member-only events like ECF Live. And then finally, you can avoid costly hiring and software mistakes by tapping into our review directory of over 10,000 reviews for agencies and e-commerce software tools. I mean, it's really hard to find unbiased reviews online right now. So often they're either paid for or they're affiliate links. All of our reviews are completely unbiased. So when you go down the road of hiring a new ad agency or looking for that new, you know, ERP software, you have a lot more confidence that you're not going to be wasting the next 3 or 4 months of your life on an expensive project. So if that sounds interesting to you, come join us. You can learn more and apply ecommercefuel.com, and we'd love to have you inside. All right, let's get back to the discussion. One thing, you know, that probably you do a much better job of than potentially some of your competitors, including those overseas, is your listings. Your listings are fantastic. Like, they're branded, they have a premium feel to them, gorgeous photography. They feel like, you know, a premium product. And so did you do that all in-house? Is that all something that, like, you know, you either, you know, ran point on, or had someone in your team ran point on in terms of hiring the photographer, writing the copy, or did it yourself? Or do you have an agency that helped out with that? Because you did an incredible job with it. And I'm sure we'll link up to them in the show notes if people want to see them, but they're really well done. And I'd love to hear how you did them and what kind of impact they've had on the sales.
You know, it's a combination of both. Originally, when I first got started, I did everything myself. At first, I just did it because I was just cheap. You know, why would I pay somebody to do it if I could do it myself? And so for the first probably 5, 6, 7 years of my life, of the company's life, everything was done by hand by me. I run a very small team in general, so I still do most of the growth work myself. But I've realized that, you know, I have limitations now. And so in a few instances, we've used agencies to help us. All of the photography, everything was done in-house. Recently, we started using some renderings as opposed to studio photography. And so we have a blend. We have some studio photography, but I've been using renderings in certain cases just because I've been happy with the way they look. And then the future of ability to manipulate those images are really great if you're starting with a 3D model that you can drop into different scenes, et cetera. So you'll see some of the newer images, or at least the main title image are renders, you know, photorealistic renders. But, you know, if you look closely, they're obviously renders. But I think they display the product in a better way, in a nice way. So we used a company called Cervex out of their New York and Columbia that I would recommend to people. They have a great price structure and they do good work. For our Amazon store page, we were using a sponsored products ad agency for about 4 months before we canned them. They did a terrible job with our sponsored products, but they did a pretty great job setting up our Amazon storefront. I mean, all the assets were our assets that they started with, whatever. They just rearranged it nicely. But I think they did a good job. But yeah, otherwise we do all the copy is, this is sad. And I'm not saying this as in a prideful way. I'm actually kind of embarrassed by it. The copy is all my copy. You know, it's all written by me. I know I should have somebody that's much better at writing do it than me. But, you know, it is what it is.
So a couple quick questions. The company that did your photography and designs or the modeling, who was that again? You said Cervex?
They were called Cervex, yes. Cervex. I can send you the link to put in there later. Or if you want, Andrew, I can introduce you to the rep or whatever. Whatever.
Great. Thank you. And then the name of the company that did the really good job on your listings was who?
Should I name them? Because I'm also knocking their sponsored products.
That's true. Okay. We'll keep that on the DL. The mixed endorsement.
Well, you know what? You know, I don't mind. They were ROI. What am I saying? We have an entire review section on the forums, right?
Here's what we'll do. If you're comfortable with it, we'll follow up. I'll follow up with after this. We can post the review privately in the private forum in the e-commerce private review directory, and then members can access that. So. You don't have to throw them under the bus publicly. But I want to dive into this, the rendering a little bit. So I'm on your Amazon page right now. I'm looking at a microfiber quilted mattress pad and topper. And it's, so I can see a mattress. There's like a couple pillows on the mattress. It's in a nice like sunny room. There's a kind of a, do you know the picture I'm talking about?
I do.
Is that a real picture or is that one of these
renderings? That is a rendering.
That's a render. How does this, because when I look at this, this looks very.
So wait, hold on. Let's make the hospitality. It's the microfiber quilted mattress pad and topper, right?
Yes. That's the one. Yep.
That is that main image. That's a render. I know. Isn't they do such a good job.
So how do they, so this of course spares you the pain of having to go rent a hotel room or stage it and get the lighting right and get a photographer, all this stuff. What asset do you just have to give them a asset of your topper or the mattress floating in space and they put everything else in there?
No, totally. I hate the studio thing. It's all terrible. You feel like people are looking at you like maybe you're shooting an adult film in that hotel room. It's especially when you're bringing in a bunch of bedding products. It's not a good look for anybody. So this worked out perfectly. So I actually sent them, I sent them the actual product. I provided them with some measurements so that, you know, they had a relative scale to work from, but, you know, they didn't have to take their own measurements. But so they had the product, so they knew what it looks like. I provided them sort of final dimensions, you know, almost like a 3D model, like what do I want it to actually look like? And then we went through a few revision processes to say, yeah, okay, now that doesn't look like the product. We need to fix this to make it look more realistic based off of, you know, knowing what the product looks like. And then the rest of it was just, you know, they kind of were collaborative in a nice way. You know, we don't want to go back and forth too many times because it's every time they have to redo a draft, it takes time and effort. But, you know, we pulled images from the web. We said, you know, went to West Elm and said, hey, I really like that nightstand. You have a model already prepared in that way. So it was really cool. And they were able to work with you. If you wanted to, they would fully render from start to finish every single object in your room that you wanted in there. Or you could pull, if you had models already prepared, they could add them to the room. So they were really flexible in how they could work, what they could do. And I, you know, it was great. And they were good people to work with.
That's amazing. And so even they get a sense of the picture, but they render everything. So it's not just like they take a picture. They kind of, they can get a sense of what your product looks like, and it's very accurate based on it. But the picture of your mattress pad, it's not the actual one that they slid into their kind of 3D model. It's everything modeled. So it all has a very, because it looks, you can't see it obviously on the podcast. I'll post a link up to the show notes for this product and the picture, but it looks like something out of like a high-end hotel advertisement.
Well, you know, that is partly what we do. So hopefully that we are achieving that goal. But you know what I'll do to give you the best perspective? Look at the image two, the white background image.
Okay, looking at it.
This is really and the reason why I wanted to pursue this strategy is the first part of the work is just creating the 3D model of the product itself. So now I have as my owned asset, this 3D model in an OBJ format that I can now drop into any rendering I want to, in any scene I want to. Who did I get this from? From a fellow ECFer, Dylan, actually hooked me up with his renderer he's in Russia, I think, or Ukraine. Russia, I'm pretty sure. And so just for fun, because he had a great rate, I'm like, hey, listen, I got some models, because we got the models already prepared. Let's drop them into some random scenes, because I just had this, I never actually pursued it, but I had this idea. I just wanted to drop mattresses into the most random scenes possible and make this sleep campaign. And I'm still going to do it at some point. But so like one of them is we dropped a bed in the middle of the desert. And like, I did that for $70 because I already had this mattress model already made. And we found like a kind of a fun, you know, desert image to drop it into. And he could take the model, drop it in there, position how we want. We added a couple of nightstands and cool lamps. And so we have this fun little bed scene, but in the middle of the desert, like on the sand. And so that's where I realized, like, when you do the rendering, it's almost like a scalable thing, because now you have this asset that you can manipulate in so many other ways without having to, like you said, book studio time, get your props, get your people, get your models, get whoever already.
And with the desert, sorry to interrupt, but with the desert too, was that, and I'm trying to think of, I just get a wrap my head around how this all works. Was the desert of kind of a modeled, like a rendered model of a desert as well? And so, because you can drop in the, almost like a Minecraft world that you're creating that actually looks real. So you can just, That's amazing. So
we dropped in a cool looking rug, some weirdo lamps. Like, it was great.
It's amazing. Yeah. Think of it. All these other, you know, all these other people are going out actually, you know, taking real photography and flying places, and you can do it all on the computer.
And I mean, you know, the thing is, it's like if you look at VR now, right? Like, it's only a reasonable proposition because the technology has gotten to the point where, you know, it's realistic. Like, I think if we, you know, part of the thing with the hotel work is, you know, they've been using renderings to sort of show off what potential hotel rooms would look like for years, right? And I've actually seen then how the quality of those renderings have improved over the years to the point now where I see some folks, you know, they'll like, if they're doing a proposal for Marriott hotels, let's say, and they're like, here's our plan for what your new Marriott hotel room is going to look like. I mean, it is more photorealistic than any rendering I've ever seen before. I've always prided myself on the ability to be like, yeah, that's fake. That's a rendering. Come on. That's not a real photography. I used to do a little photography too. So I always thought like, oh yeah, I know what I'm talking about. I can tell the difference. I can't even tell the difference anymore. So I think that's why it's so powerful. You know, dangerous, and depending on what other avenue you want to talk about. But in terms of us as e-commerce sellers being able to produce really good images at a much, much lower price and without all the overhead of a studio shoot, this is great. And I think it works well. And we haven't gotten any negative feedback. We haven't had anybody say, hey, why you got fake images up on your, you know, page? I think everybody's like, this is a good representation of the product. We accept it and it looks great.
So I have one last question here, and I think I'm terrified to know the answer, but it's going to be very cool if I'm correct. So your fourth picture is of a woman kind of laid, you know, laying out on on one of your beds, like fanning herself, and it looks, and what I think you know where I'm getting at here, is she a virtual model that you just drop down into the bed, or is she a real person you had to take a photo?
Wouldn't that be something if that was a drop in?
It'd be pretty amazing.
Yeah, I'll say thank God she is real, because if she wasn't, I think we'd be entering a new era of humanity. Like, let's let Blade Runner 2021. That would be messed up. I would, you know, that'd be, oh God, I'd be a rat at the feeder bar. This is terrible. So No, luckily that is a very lovely model that we worked with a really great photography team out in LA that I met through my wife, who she has a beauty company, and she worked with these two sisters that do just fantastic product photography. Their focus was in the fashion space, but you know, they're like, yeah, let's try this out and do this bedding shoot. So we sent them a bunch of product. We worked with them to pick a model and, you know, storyboard the whole thing. And then they took these photos. So this is part of a, you know, I think we've got a good 100 images out of this one particular shoot that are all really fun.
Got it. Very cool. I didn't know. I was 50-50. I was like, it looks so real, but the other picture looked so real too. And you know, I don't know what's real or not anymore.
This is 2021, Andrew. No, nobody knows what reality is anymore. Blue pill or red pill.
Welcome to 2021. The thing I wanted to ask you about is, and you may or may not still be doing this, but at one point in the forum, you mentioned that you built a 4-day work week. Like it was really important to you to just work 4 days a week and have that fifth day off. I'd love to hear like why you decided, the why is probably pretty obvious, more time with your son, obviously is super important to you. How did you do that? What did you cut out to prioritize to make that happen? And is that something that you're still doing? Because it's like, is that something you've been able to make it like a consistent part of your life?
Oh my God, Andrew, you must have scoured the forum for that comment because I don't even remember making that comment or post. And so, you know, I was going to ask
you. I work 80 hours a week. What are you talking about?
I was going to ask you, I'm like, was I asking for help on how to achieve a 4-day work week or did I say I was doing it? So short story, no 4-day work week, not at all. Never happened even once, but, and hey, 2020, what I have figured out is that I don't need to work a 4-day work week. I just don't need to work as ridiculous of a 5-day work week. And that actually ends up being really great. So what I've really done is just, you know, hey, we talk about the benefits of e-commerce, right? People, the digital nomad stuff all the time, but we don't often practice it and we overwork ourselves just like with any other job. And so what I realized is I waste a lot of time because I'm trying to work too much. So I force myself to eliminate it. And now, you know, I come into the office at, you know, maybe around 11 or so, you know, I'll play with my kid in the morning, eat breakfast, go work out in the morning. Cause I realize if I don't work out in the morning, I literally just will never do it. So it has to be in the morning or it's not going to happen. And then I'll get into work, you know, at some clearly way later hour than most of the other people on my GChat are. You know, we'll work to maybe a little bit later than normal, depending on the day, but then come back home and, you know, have dinner with my wife and watch some TV with her and relax. And so I think rather than trying to do it as a 4-day work week, I realized that spreading it out over 5 days, but just making it consciously less hours ended up working really well. And at the same time too, you know this, having young children, if you took that fifth day off and you actually just took it off and had fun with it, could you imagine the passive aggressiveness you would get from your wife for just not doing anything on that fifth day? So I realized even if I had the fifth day off, I probably wouldn't actually do anything that fun with it. So 5 days fully in the week, but much shorter hours ended up working out really nice.
It's amazing how even just like 45 minutes of a calmer morning, like having coffee with your wife or taking a little, like it's more than, it changes the whole, sets the whole mood for the day. And you just feel it's more than just that 45 minutes. So it's amazing.
Very much of a nicer person this way. It's much easier to deal with me.
Yeah, well, it looks like I need to hire our researcher, i.e. me, but still got something good out of it. So it's a win-win. So I want to kind of last stage here. I'd love to ask you 5 or 6 questions here in the lightning round. If you can, try to, you know, kind of just, we'll buzz through these. So try to keep, you know, maybe 3-4 sentence answers at the most. First question, what's one of your fondest memories from your childhood?
You know, if for my childhood, is this college or is college count as childhood?
No, let's say like pre-high school graduation.
Man, my memories are so bad. But I remember when I was a kid, like I mentioned before, I'm Indian. My parents are Indian. They were born in India. I was born here. And we used to, as a kid, we used to go to India and visit family maybe once every 3-4 years. And I was at one of my family house, a cousin's house there when I was real young. And I remember being in the kitchen with, you know, and it's India, right? Like, it's like 40 years backwards. So they had, I won't say servants, but, you know, domestic helpers, I guess, in the kitchen, but they're, you know, more than one. And I just remember seeing the girl who was the daughter of one of the workers there in the kitchen. And I just remember playing with her and I just remember seeing nobody's playing with her. Why isn't anybody playing with her? She's a little girl. And I started playing with her, and it made me think, it made me really appreciate what my parents did by moving us to the US and giving us a whole different perspective and culture and place to grow up. It really just reaffirmed for me all of those things. And it also reaffirmed the fact that I really just want people to be happy. And so my endeavors in life have evolved around just trying to help people, I think. So that was a very formative experience. Something I, you know, you asked me that question. It's the first thing that I think about as a kid, and I don't remember that much else.
What's your favorite item that you sell that we can link up to for people to check out?
Sure. Our comforter, aka the duvet insert. I love that product. I literally, like, that's the one I take from my bed to the sofa if I'm feeling particularly lazy or hungover. And it's just, it's super comfortable. It's a great product. We've always sold a lot of them, and they're really great.
Cool. We'll link up to that. Who's the most interesting or memorable person you've met as a part of being a part of eCommerce Fuel?
Oh man, Andrew, you have literally put together an incredible group of humans. Everybody is interesting that I've met. Let's say, can I do two? Is that okay if I do two?
Yeah, of course.
Okay, great. We got Double D, aka Derek Dodds, who is literally one of the most unique and loving human beings I've ever met. Maybe a little bit randy and risque at times, but definitely the most unique. But what a heart on that guy. Oh my God, Kayvon is just a force of nature. I have never met anybody like that, and I'm so happy I have gotten to meet him.
And we will, both of those gentlemen actually have been on the podcast, so we'll link up to episodes with both if you'd like to get to know either of them a little bit.
I gotta go listen back to those. I can only imagine how those went.
Oh, I mean, you wouldn't, you're going to be surprised what they said about you, actually. So, yeah. So happy listening. Well, Sujay, thank you so much for like sharing all this stuff. It's cool hearing your journey from medicine to e-commerce on Amazon to the 4-day work week that you don't have.
One day, sir. One day it'll happen.
So if you're listening, check out his, either, you know, for one or two reasons, check out the Amazon listings or hospitology.com. We'll link up to it. That'll show you all of his stuff and just great product line. Super cool. Didn't even know this coming into this, the rendered 3D modeling images that look good enough to you know, believe they're real, as well as pick something up for yourself.
Yeah. And anybody, feel free to hit me up if you need that contact. I'm happy to give that too.
Perfect. We'll link up to that in the show notes. So if you are an eCommerce Fuel community member, we'll link up to that and you can access that directory. And that was for the people that did a horrible job on your Amazon ads, but did a really good job with your Amazon listings, right? In terms of like the enhanced brand content.
Okay. That's, I wouldn't say they did a horrible job. They just didn't do anything. Let's just say that.
Didn't do anything. Fair enough. Yeah, this was a lot of fun. Thank you so much for being a part of our community, coming out to multiple events. And it's a lot of fun to get to know you better and appreciate you being a part of our group and be willing to share.
Great. Thank you. Thank you, Andrew, for creating this thing and hosting this thing. I can't wait till the next ECF Live. And thanks for letting me ramble for a few minutes here.
That's going to do it for this week. A big thank you again to OneClick Upsell for making this show possible. Learn more about how to offer powerful upsells to your customers at ecommercefuel.com/upsell. And if you're a store owner, an In the Trenches store owner looking for your tribe, you really need to join us inside the eCommerce Fuel private community. It's the world's largest, most active community of 7- and 8-figure e-commerce store owners with a thriving discussion forum, software and agency reviews, live events, and much more. You can learn more about our community and apply at ecommercefuel.com. Thanks so much for listening. Work hard and adventure often. And I'm looking forward to seeing you again next Friday.
The ASY Radio Network, live from New York.